Like the conversations you hear on Basic Folk with your favorite roots artists? Then join Back Catalog Listening Party, a weekly podcast where you can dig deeper into their catalog. Top songwriters like Mary Gaucher, Chris Smither, Dar Williams, and Lizzie No join host Mother Banjo and Anthony Earig to talk about their old albums with a live online audience. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and learn about attending live tapings at backcataloglisteningparty.com/join. Hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the bluegrass situation. I host this podcast, and my name is Cindy House. Hello, and thanks for finding us. On the podcast today, we will hear back our conversation with John Mook that was recorded on the Kiamo Cruise. We'll get to that momentarily. But first, are you on Basic Folk's email list? It's a once-a-month note that drops into your inbox and lets you know what's going on with the podcast, who's been on recently, who's coming up, etc., and so on. We are also on social media at Basic Folk Pod on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. We're also a listener-supported operation here. You can make a monthly contribution of $5 a month, get a handmade Basic Folk beanie. The link is in the show notes if you'd like to make a contribution, or you can check out our website, basicfolk.com. Okay. Lizzie No and myself have just recently returned from an epic 5-day trip to Alaska, where we did some live shows with the Anchorage-based concert series Parlor in the Round. In the coming months, we will be getting to an episode of Basic Folk featuring segments from those concert series. We had a lot of fun with Kevin Worrell and Michelle Wasson and Annie Bartholomew, great singer-songwriter from Juneau. We can't even believe what we saw in Alaska. Everything everyone has ever said is true. If you're listening now because we met you on our Alaska trip, hello and welcome. Oh my God, I can't believe where you live. Okay, let's get to John Mook. Originally from the village of Mutungo, Uganda, which is near the country's capital of Kampala, John Mook's journey to his current life of touring with an Austin, Texas home base has been unconventional. On board the Kiamo Cruise earlier this year, we talked to John about his childhood experiences, including fetching water with friends and We Are the World, which was the first Western music he had ever experienced. He also recounts the emotional reunion with his twin sister at the recent Cambridge Folk Festival, revealing how distance from his family has shaped his identity as an artist. He had actually not seen her, his friends, or any family before that for many years due to leaving originally to work on a cruise ship. In fact, the very same line we were cruising on at that moment, and work visa realities. John discusses the moment he first held a guitar at age 19, which felt like such a natural fit. He shares how traditional Ugandan music influences his sound and how he began to learn English through song before mastering the language. John speaks about his experience with food. Growing up, his family was food insecure. When he started performing on cruise ships, he was actually overwhelmed by the amount of food that was available. He explained the ever-present googly eyes on his guitar, which tie into learning about distinct cultural differences between America and Uganda. Listen on. Like many countries, it is normal in Uganda for male friends to hold hands. This and many cultural differences were learned the hard way for John, so the eyes on the guitar symbolize an always smiling friend that will be there for him no matter what. He wraps up this episode of Basic Folk with a great lightning round, giving us the inside scoop on the best food aboard Kiamo, his dream collaboration, and in his opinion, as an industrial design student, what's the most beautiful product in the world? Let's take a listen to a song from John's recent debut album, Shake Shake, and then we'll get to our conversation with John Mook aboard Kiamo on Basic Folk. Thank you. John Mook, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you doing?
We ask the questions.
Lizzie, so aggressively starting off this interview.
Well, that's my friend John Mook. I have to let the audience know that we're fraternizing with our guests.
They have a pre-existing relationship.
It's true.
Okay, so here we are, Kayamo. We're cruising. You have cruising experience, but this is like a really different experience for you. How is your Kayamo going so far?
Kayamo is going good because I'm in the guest area. When I first performed on a boat, I was in the crew area. I would only come to the guest area for only my time of gig. Yeah. After the gig, you have to drop back. So this is much fun.
Nice. Yeah. We're having fun. We're having fun hanging out with you.
Oh, yeah.
The village that you grew up in Uganda is Mutungo.
Mutungo.
Mutungo. Yeah. It's about a I tried to figure this out. It's about a 25-minute drive to the capital city of Kampala.
Yes.
How is that pronunciation?
Kampala, that's perfect.
Good. Okay. What is your village like and what family do you have in the village?
Most times it's called a village. So in Uganda, they don't call it a village. It's like a small town. It's small towns that are around the capital. And for the village, it's a place far away where your tribe comes from. So every person lives in the city, but you have a village where your tribe belongs.
Okay.
That's where your parents grew up. And so, but the area I grew up in, they call them the slums of Kampala. So they have the middle class and people who are kind of wealthy, but not very, very wealthy. So me, I grew down much in the slum area.
So it's S-L-U-M.
Slam. S-A-L-A-M.
Oh, like salam.
Slam.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. So I read this story about boys needing to get water from the well. You didn't have tap water in your homes. And you said, me and my friends, we would meet up with jerry cans. We would go to the well, bring water. That's what all the guys did, which led me to believe like this was like kind of a hang, a kind of an activity.
It was fun, you know, because you would go to the well and just sit with your fellow guy friends and talk for hours. Mm-hmm. And then it's natural how people do it there. They're like, okay, the girls stay home and they cook the food and the guys go and do the heavy stuff, carry the jerry cans of water. So
what would your crew of boys with jerry cans, what did that crew look like?
We were little. I mean, we're all young. Sometimes someone will be like, hey, let's carry and shift from here up to here. And then I'll carry from here up to there. Because the jerry cans sometimes were big. When I talk of jerry cans.
So you carry in shifts?
Yeah, we would carry in shift depending on how close you were with that person.
How far would you have to carry him?
It was far. It would take us like 2 hours.
Oh my gosh.
To go and come back. But plus some few minutes of wasting time.
Good.
On the way.
Of course.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be little boys. Right?
Yeah.
What did your parents do for work when you were growing up?
My mom was a primary teacher.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so she did that for a while and she stopped. Yeah, she didn't want to shout anymore with kids. Yeah.
When we met at Cambridge Folk Fest.
Yeah.
I will never forget that day because you reunited with your sister for the first time in a very long time.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear a little bit more about that day. And also just, you know, it struck me that these musical opportunities that you've had and that, you know, we've shared once or twice have taken you so far from your family. How has that distance impacted how you look at your journey as an artist?
Distance is in stages because at first you don't see it as a distance. You see it as you're taking an opportunity. And then when I came and then things started kicking in, reality, whereby you come thinking you're visiting, you realize, oh, the country has visa situations. You have to meet all these, you have to meet lawyers, which people home expected me to come back soon, but soon took 6 years. And then they even gave up. My best friends gave up. They were like, dude, I don't think you'll ever come back here. So meeting my sister was really amazing because we are twins. And my worry was the only person she knew was the 23-year-old. That's all she knew.
23-year-old John.
The one who left. That's how their brain was thinking about me. Even when I met her, she was just so confused. She was like, how did you learn English? How did you learn to stand in front of people? To her, it was like I was many years ahead of her. Because most people in Uganda don't have lots of things to inspire them. So what you leave someone doing now, it's what they will be doing 50 years from now.
What was it like to sing with her that day? I mean, it was very powerful for the audience. I was very moved, and the whole audience was very moved. I don't think we'd seen anything like it, honestly, the connection that you had and like the fact that that was your first time reuniting. What did it feel like to sing with her?
I mean, it all started backstage. She was like, how do you do that? I'm like, do you want to try it? You just stand there and sing. She was like, I can try. So I was like, okay, sing this, run away. She stood there, you know, she was shaking. I was like, I wish I told the sound guy to mute her somehow.
But it was beautiful.
It was amazing, but I was scared that she's going to mess it up. But she learned that in life you can, within a minute, you can go out of your fears and do something you've never thought. Because that was her fourth day in a Western country, and she was standing in front of 2,000 people. So she had never dreamt of that at all.
I was pretty scared, and I'm a professional musician. I was really amazed.
So, John, for as long as you can remember, you have been just completely obsessed with music. How do you first remember music making you feel, and is it the same feeling music still gives you?
It was at school. We had this band. It was like horn air instruments. These guys just came in for the school anthem and the national anthem at school. But I remember sitting in the middle of these guys. I was like, it sounded beautiful.
Just to be clear, you were not playing a brass instrument.
No, I was not part of that. I just sneaked and I was seated in front of tubas, this big stuff. And people were like, what's that boy doing in between there? It sounded just so beautiful. And that's how I feel when I listen to music, most especially Western music. It just feels, I get that same feeling. It's just beautiful.
We have also heard a story of you joining the choir at your school.
Yeah.
Although you didn't sing. We're getting a fearless picture of John. How does music make you fearless?
Fearless? That's difficult. Like, in what way?
You've already described three situations in which music has inspired you to jump up and do something you've never done before.
And also push your sister to do something she's never done before.
So what's the question?
Well, are you fearless in other areas of your life, or is there something about music that helps you push yourself beyond your comfort zone?
I'm just hard-headed. I believe every human being can do anything, you know, without the structures of the world we have. You can just wake up and adapt to something, just the way we train animals to adapt to our schedules, what they eat. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean they can't eat anything else. It's just that we train them to do that. So even us, we can be that way. So it's how music has, maybe it's made me more hard-headed. I don't know, but maybe.
There have been a couple of really wild opportunities that you've taken, which have really boosted you musically speaking. We talked about that time you accepted a gig on a cruise. Also the time that Dan Auerbach reached out to work together. He just basically messaged you on Instagram. How did your intuition and your curiosity help determine like what was a scam and what was real?
Honestly, at first I didn't think it was a scam, because some things came as if it was new to you. Like the cruise line thing, I just asked myself, how am I almost 22 years and I have never seen a boat huge like that, you know, not on a photo, nothing. That first photo I saw was the first, that picture spoke to me a lot. I kept it, folding it, it even turned old because I was showing everyone, is this real? And everyone, even my friends couldn't believe it, you know, so it kind of made me feel like, oh, let me be more pushy about this. Maybe it's real. Not until I saw the video, I was like, it's real. Yeah. These are real people on this boat, I better say yes.
So it's interesting to hear you carrying around the picture of the cruise ship, showing it to people. So when you actually saw the cruise ship in real life, like, how did you feel? How did it compare to what you thought it might be like?
Actually, at first, I didn't see it in real life. You know, I remember I was following this big guy, security guy from the airport to the hotel. He came for me in the morning, and I just entered the tunnel. And that tunnel was bringing me straight to the boat. So I didn't even see the physical boat when
I
joined.
So you got on the boat before you even saw it?
Yeah. The shuttle put me right at the entrance, and I was just following what they're telling me. Not until I went to pee and the water was shaking, and I was confused. I was like, what the hell? But we were sailing. We were gone. So the first time I saw the ship is when I got off at the port. And I was like, oh, wow. It's real.
I think there's a song in that. I think there's a song in that story that you felt the boat before you saw.
Yeah, I felt the boat before I saw it.
So your first experience hearing Western music, correct us if we're wrong, was We Are the World.
Yes.
Can you put yourself in your shoes at that time? What did it feel like? What does it feel like to hear that song for the first time? And do you still listen to it now?
I was curious about Western music. But this holiday, I asked my cousin, because he had a newborn baby, I was like, hey, can I come and be a nanny? Mm-hmm. Which most guys don't do that stuff. But I just felt that he had a TV. We didn't have a colored TV. So I was like, okay, I'll go and see football and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I was cleaning one day under his cupboard, and a CD, I was cleaning and a CD came out, and it had many musicians on top. And I put it on the table and waited for him to come back. And I told him, can you help me play this? Because I didn't know how to use his stuff. And he played it. But the first thing I saw when I finished the whole song, I was like, oh, I've been scared all this time to sing. If all people are singing in one tune, that means I also have a voice. And it can also fit in that same exact tune. So that's the one thing that I listened to, and immediately I was like, I'm going to not stop doing what I'm doing because my voice can fit somewhere. That's what that CD showed me. Because all these people were different, and when tones were different, but it was one tune.
Right.
So that's what that CD helped me to get into Western stuff. I didn't know anyone. I knew only Michael Jackson.
Michael, no.
Yeah.
Michael's why I'm here today. Yeah. I saw Michael Jackson on TV when I was a little kid, and I was like, that, what job is that?
Yeah. It's called shouting for people.
Who's your favorite voice that you discovered when We Are the World? Aside from Michael.
I don't even know his name. It was like a growly rock voice. It was a guy. I don't know his name.
We have to look at the cast.
We need to get to the bottom of this, and we'll be in touch.
So, conversely, growing up, the music that you heard was local music. So,
yes,
people from the surrounding tribes where you grew up. How does that traditional music make its way into your sound now, if at all?
It's melody. The way you say words, the way you add words, kind of describes where you came from, you know. So Uganda has 100 languages and almost 60 tribes, meaning each tribe plays their own kind of instrument, their kind of dance, their kind of dressing. So listening to all that, it helps me much to learn sound. When I listen to something immediately, I will play it wrong, but since I have that melody kind of mindset, I'll be still in that circle. Wrong, good, wrong, good. So,
you saw your first guitar when you were 19 years old, and you said, when I saw it, it just made sense to me. When I held it, it just made sense. What does it feel like to hold a guitar now?
It feels amazing. It's a instrument you can carry around. It can call upon learning more. It can call upon appreciating what you know and just mastering the craft. So it just makes me feel like I appreciate the small it taught me, and I use the small it taught me to create something new. Mm. So I've tried to learn the complicated stuff, but since I'm illiterate, it's been hard. I was like, okay, let me give up on that and play my simple stuff, because that's all I can really understand.
The classics.
Yeah, the classic, basic stuff.
Your guitar has googly eyes on it, and you actually put them on there. I heard you talk about this so that you would always have a friend.
Yes.
The googly eyes are also on your record cover. In having those silly eyes on your main instrument that you bring on stage and play, they're on your album cover. What's the message you'd like to share with people who first encounter you in your music?
The whole story about the eyes comes from when I arrived in Austin. I had a friend of mine I thought was a good friend, because I'd just moved, and he was there for me. But I was used to Uganda. If a guy is your friend, you can hold hands, you can hold their neck when you're happy. So I did that to this guy, and immediately, the first time, he looked at me with a weird face. And I didn't understand why. I was like, yeah, we played a good game, because we were playing disc golf. And then the next day, we played disc golf, and it was fun. So I held his hand and started swinging it. And that's when he became so pissed. And I still didn't know why. He was like, hey man, I am straight and I'm going right now. And he left me at the park. And I didn't have a car. So I had to walk for all those minutes going back home. And when I went to the room where I lived, with this couple was like, hey, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. But I was not. I felt like it's going to be hard to make a friend, you know, because I didn't know what I did wrong. I was like, what did I do wrong? And I drew eyes on the guitar, because that was my friend that was there for me. So that's how all the googly eyes stuff comes from. So that guitar is always smiling. So
my heart is broken.
My heart is broken mostly for the many men out there who don't know how much friendship they're missing out on by rejecting those types of like gestures and connections. That's so sad.
Yeah, I think it's culture. With time, I started understanding. I was like, oh, this is not the culture in Uganda, because Ugandan people are just free, happy. When they find your food, they don't ask. They just start eating.
Right.
You know, you don't want to do that in America. Someone will be like, hey, you need to have some manners. So that kind of friendship, it's all learning. And it inspired me to draw those googly eyes, because that was my friend, that guitar, the first one. Yeah.
Okay, so you went to school for industrial design.
Yes.
And you have an eye for the visual. Can you talk about your visual brand as a musician? Like, are there colors or themes or styles that come up for you consistently in your, you know, solo music work?
I think it's collage. I like collage. I like getting ready-made art, cutting stuff and use it to create different art.
Cool.
Sometimes it looks wrong, but I don't know. Mistakes look beautiful too.
And I think when you're the artist, you're right. You know, like, it might look wrong to someone else, but like, if you are the creator, what you choose is right.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. There's some art that is annoying.
Coming back to like earlier topics of like your sister asking, how did you learn English? You've always written songs and performed in English. How has that connection, like the musical connection, influenced your relationship to the English language and your ability to learn it?
It's really helped, because I learned singing English before speaking proper English. So many people heard me sing, and when I was speaking, they were like, is that the same person? Because my brain musically, again, sound, it picked up melody quicker than my speech, you know. And the more I moved to America and I lived with a couple that was American from deep the country, so they kept on running off their R's every day. And I couldn't get it, but with time, practicing music and talking to them, it perfected my English. Even the songwriting, because I wrote using direct translation, where someone speaks to you and you first translate in your local language and then respond. But with time, that went away, slowly, and I dream in English now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to express through song that you don't feel like you can express in English?
Sometimes, but again, I just translate it. Some things are hard to translate, but I always tell Kevin, what do you think this situation means?
Yeah.
It's like stress. When I came here, I didn't know what stress was. That was the first time I had ever heard of that word in my whole life. Because this friend of mine called me. He's like, hi, I'm stressed. I have no job. And then he got the job. He called me, hey, I got this job, but I'm stressed. I'm like, what is stress? It was confusing. I didn't know if it goes this side or this side. But he explained to me what it means, and I started reflecting to it. When I'm frustrated, I'm like, is this stress?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you get stressed now.
Maybe. I don't know.
Had you gotten stressed before, but you just didn't know what it was called?
I don't think I'd ever been stressed, because I think sometimes the words we speak control our lives, you know, and we say, okay, that's called stress. So it's like a doctor telling you your heart has a problem, even if it's not. You start feeling it hurting just because of that word.
That's deep.
Okay, let's talk about food. When you worked on the cruises, you were around more food than ever before in your life. You'd actually get to, like we all do here on the cruise, if you go to the buffet, you get to serve yourself. And you would do that, and it built up your confidence with food.
Yeah.
What is your relationship to food now? What do you like to eat?
Right now, I cook most of Ugandan food because I realized if you learn how to cook, some vegetables are cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because many people don't want to cook them. So I do most of the cooking, and I'm talking to friends. You know, some are like, hey, I'm from Pakistan. And you're like, can we try that food, you know? So it's been learning.
So next year on Kayamo, John Mook cooking class.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Sign me up.
We would attend.
Don't trust my cooking.
When you first got to America,
yeah,
it was a big change. Big trucks.
Yes.
Everything moving fast. A lot of white people.
Yes.
Like logistical issues. Where am I going to live? How am I going to make my life? Did you take it in stride? Was there culture shock? Were you afraid?
It was happiness. I remember I was very, very happy. Because I was stuck at that airport standing, and I was not even scared that I didn't know my way tomorrow. I was just happy that I crossed from a different part to another part. And it was just beautiful.
I'm starting to understand why you don't get stressed.
Yes. No, it was just amazing because compared to the life I'd come from, and the things that were in front of me, I felt bad if I was felt any negative or stressed moment because I'd struggled. You'd eat once a day and you'd have to choose if it's lunch or dinner, and you have the food, but it's not enough for two meals. And when I came to a place that has all that, I just told myself, why would I be sad? So remembering that past helps move day by day.
Okay, you've had a huge year. You worked with Dan Auerbach on your debut album. You've been playing a lot of big concerts, big tours. You are headed to Australia. You've been doing some really big interviews, and you've had a lot of opportunities to like share with the world who you are. So how do you think about the way you are telling your story in conversation versus how you tell it in your songs? And have you had any media training? Like, how have you worked on sharing your story with the world?
So sharing a story when singing, all songs I have is experience. I tend to not shift from what has not existed or what's not existing, you know, which is, it's a choice. You know, I feel like due to my low English past or experience of the language, I can only create around my boundary of experience. So that's why each song is something I've passed through. That's why I just tell a story of what has passed through, which I've been writing with many other musicians. And I realized the moment you start writing, many people shift from their present life and they start thinking about something that has never existed or that is just going in the mind, it tends when you perform it to not have a story for it. You just like, this is a song called this. So yeah, it's hard because I like to connect emotionally to a moment. So I think it's the same even now because the story is all a circle.
Whoa. Yeah. Presence is the key to all of it.
Yeah.
I want to talk about being on tour.
Yes.
It is a very weird life. You're meeting all new people every single day. You're probably sleeping in a different bed each night. Do you have to consciously work to reconnect to yourself and like find a sense of routine and consistency when you're on the road?
I tend to see it as a story of life. It's what you're living today, you know, so I just, day comes and day goes. And when I go back to Austin, it's like a flipping a switch, you know, tour is done and back to the routine. When it ends, then you're like, okay, I'm back to the road.
Do you get excited to go on tour when you're home?
Hell no.
I feel the same way. People are always like, are you excited to do this? And I'm like, when I get there, I will enjoy it.
Yes.
I'm not excited now.
Yeah. Because most times it's new places. You can't get excited over a place you don't know, you know. And you have to go there and learn it. And next time maybe you're like, yeah, can't wait to be back in France. I have my favorite coffee shop. Mm-hmm. So. But I didn't know what, most places it's my first time, so I don't know anything to be excited about rather than reaching there.
Yeah.
And then next time I'll be excited.
All right, we got one more question, and then are you up for a lightning round?
I'm down. What's lightning round? Food?
No, it's just like a quick top of the head question round.
Instead of thinking deeply, just say the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, just to show we contain multitudes.
Okay, sure. I can try that.
Our last like big question is, what makes a great love song?
Emotion.
It's like the first lightning
like
round question.
It.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. All right. Lightning round. What is the best food on Kayamo?
I like the orange cake.
Okay. All right. Good.
Yeah.
What is your favorite car to drive?
Audi.
Nice.
Dogs or cats?
Cats. Both.
Let me do this one and then you do the last one. Okay. Who is your dream collaboration other than the guy with the scratchy voice on We Are the World?
I would say Labrice Ifri.
Oh, yeah.
From the 70s.
That would be smooth as hell.
Yeah.
In your informed opinion as an industrial designer, what is the most beautiful product you have ever come across?
In that field of art?
What's the most beautiful product?
Like artwork?
Like a water bottle, a car.
A computer.
A coffee table.
I think a laptop.
All right.
Yeah.
Laptops are amazing.
Yeah.
Like the early 2000s clamshell MacBook?
Yeah, I mean laptops. Computers in general.
Nice.
I've seen them evolve, and when I first saw one, I was curious. I was like, is that email sent? How do I know it's sent?
Is
and then
it real?
You only know when it's responded back. You're like, oh, it reached.
John Mook, you've been a wonderful guest. Thank you for joining us on Basic Folk.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for your time. Let's cruise.
Oh, yeah, let's cruise. You all know how to ask questions.
Do we know how to ask questions?
I got what you did there. I got what you did there. This episode of Basic Folk was produced by Anthony Cabrera. Dietrich Strauss composes our music. Basic Folk is a production of The Bluegrass Situation. You can find all of our episodes there. You can search for Basic Folk in the SiriusXM app. Find us on FolkAlley.com or Folk Alley's mobile app. Go to our website, basicfolk.com, or you can listen wherever you get podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend. Like maybe that friend who just wants a little bit of under-the-hood information about what it's like to be a performer on a cruise ship and where the best food actually happens. All right, thanks for listening all the way to the end. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.